Namaskar. Hello and welcome to P Guru's channel. I'm your host, Sri Iyer. Joining me is Professor R. Vaidyanathan, also fondly called as Professor RV. And we're going to be talking about this wealth distribution from a finance angle. We've looked at it from management. We've looked at it from on-the-ground experiences. This is the third view. Let's welcome Professor RV. Professor RV, Namaskaram and welcome to P Guru's channel. How are you, sir?
Namaskaram, Sri Iyer. Nice to meet with you. Namaste, Namaskaram, Vanakkam. Before we get into the topic, I thought I should tell you or ask you something interesting. You, I think yesterday or so, you gave a small video about this tax havens and the various money being kept in location. You mentioned Maldives also, one of the locations, if I am right.
Yes.
Today,
yes.
I read a news that Stalin is planning to go there for a holiday, not at Gaon. I'm told he is going to go for a longer period. It's a very coincidence, or is there anything more than what meets the eye?
Sir, there is definitely more than what meets the eye, in my opinion, Professor RV. I have to preface it with my opinion. This is what I think happens. Again, my conjecture, my guess, educated guess. Do you know, Professor RV, which is the biggest software organization in the world today? Maximum number of employees.
Yeah.
You want to guess?
Come again?
Do you want to take a guess on which organization has the most number of software engineers?
Most number of?
Software engineers. Not Microsoft. Software.
It should be something like Google or Microsoft.
No,
or
no company. No company, sir. It is National Security Agency, NSA.
NSA, okay.
The NSA has cracked every algorithm known to mankind. WhatsApp, Telegram, Skype, you name it, they have all the keys. So every call spoken from anyone to anyone else is recorded, indexed, referenced, also looked for words like bad words. You know, you understand what I mean by that. For future reference. So, yeah. Anything now, you pick up the phone and talk to somebody, things are not going to be moved because somebody is listening. So, you have to go in person to move assets from place A to place B. That way, you are assured that only a few people are in the know. You know, the circle kept tight and not many people will come to know. In fact, you'll be surprised to know, Professor RV, that many times when you have meetings like this, the phones are kept away.
Yeah.
Because Pegasus can even tap when your phone is just inactive. So things are getting a little complicated for life of people who want to salt away illegally earned money. So they have to go in person. And the reason the entire family goes is because, like our topic today, there is redistribution perhaps going to take place. You understand?
And Iyer, you know that some of these I have covered in this actually.
Yes, yes, yes.
In a very comprehensive fashion. Maldives is also mentioned here as one of the interesting places. And anyhow, very nice to see that you have forecast a bit earlier than the event. But the only thing is, I think you also know about it, Maldives late has become more pronounced anti-India. They have asked Indian military to leave the place and their cabinet ministers mocked at India. And they have moved more closer to China. And the recent election actually, the party which is the current ruling party, they have got more than two-thirds. Which is, they started with the campaign as you know, out India or go out India, and they formed the government. First trip he made was to China, and they have become very, very close to China. One has to wait and watch the development which is taking place there. Anyhow, and after that, you know, you might recall PM made a sort of a video of sitting in one of our own Andaman Lakshadweep Islands and encouraged people to use our facilities, and it did impact whatever reports suggest Maldives tourism. But it is replaced by the Chinese. Indians have come down significantly. Chinese, it appears, have gone up by 400%. So they are now flooding the Maldives as a tourist destination. Anyhow, all these put together doesn't give a good, what one can call, good optics for Stalin to visit that place now in a large group also of family. And it's a very interesting thing. We have to wait and see. I am very confident our own ED or whatever that relevant agencies will be, you know, tracking these developments. I hope so.
Professor Arvi, the interesting thing here is that anyone who, you know, has money salted away, they cannot but appear on the radar of China also. Maldives, China influence. Sri Lanka, China influence. Singapore, China influence. Malaysia, China influence. So these people, and I'm hearing that the First Congress family has salted its money, billions of it, in Macau, which is actually a Chinese territory now.
Correct. You have also mentioned in the passing,
yes, sir,
that some of the Dravidian parties have salted money in, you know, various locations. And you told, you have mentioned, if I recall, that some of the handlers are, you know, extreme Islamist type of thing.
Got radicalized, yes. So this becomes a huge problem. You cannot touch them. You cannot do anything with them. And they have to, basically, they are getting a free hand, Professor Arvi. And see, these are all the problems that India faces. The common man doesn't know it because these are all cleverly hidden, and it acts, takes place in, you know, it's not happening in public sight. But there is what happens is there is a constant chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, chipping. That's why these people try to, the destruction of temples is for two reasons. Politician gain because they do land grab. Now, the other thing is those things, once the murti is stolen from a temple, let's say 1,000-year-old temple, the murti is gone. People stop going to that temple. Next thing, what happens? That area becomes ripe for conversion. Because they can go and mock. Saying, what did your God do? Somebody came and stole away. What did your God do? And then these people will have fake tamasha guys who will be like, then they'll be on their wheelchair and suddenly somebody will sprinkle some water. Immediately the guy starts walking and dancing. All BS. Hindus need to go and take these things head on. Anyway, so the Jagruti is happening. At the same time, we still have a lot of challenges. Professor Arvi, redistribution of wealth from a finance perspective, you know, talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on this. See, till 1985, you had the estate tax. Same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Since you brought up this interesting topic, which is, you know, raging on a large scale, there are four aspects to this whole debate. First aspect is identification of the poorer segment or beneficiaries, for which you have to do a survey, and assuming that we would like to identify the genuine poor in order to distribute whatever available wealth and whichever mechanism. So that for that we have to conduct a large-scale survey. That is what Rahul Gandhi is telling in every one of the meetings. He says, and he talks about caste census. It also includes religion-based census, in the sense not just Hindu caste, other communities are also to be covered. That is the first dimension. Second dimension is identification of the assets which require to be distributed, for which he says he will conduct a survey of the institutional framework. I do not understand exactly what he means. Anyhow, he says institutions, financial institution framework and other thing we will cover in another. So identification of the assets which is held by individuals as well as you know, families, maybe even temples, all these things. Physical assets only to be identified, and financial assets also to be for which he says another. This is second aspect of the problem. Third aspect of the problem is the mechanics of giving, distributing these benefits of the assets, either by taxing these assets, assuming that we are able to identify the assets, you know, some tax to be levied, or as Sam Pitroda was telling in US, it's not a, he made a mistake, it's not a federal aspect in US, it's individual states. Some six states, if I recall, have that issue. After the death of the person, the portion of it is taken over by the state, and maybe it can be used by the state or redistributed. The mechanics of doing it. And the fourth dimension of the problem is the India Alliance coming to power in order to implement this. The fourth one, we will take it up much later. That's not a very, what you call, easy task. Because unless they come to power, they will not be able to think of implementing this. Anyhow, the first task is identification using what is known as the caste census. Rahul should be told by somebody in 2017 when the current, when his Congress government was in power in Karnataka, the same chief minister was there, they conducted a survey. It's called a socio-economic survey, but primarily it was identifying caste survey. And exhaustive all over. Karnataka is one of the pioneers in conducting socio-economic surveys, that we should know. From the 30s, they have been doing this. So they did the exhaustive survey. And interestingly, the survey results have not been released. They are all kept inside a Godrej Almera with a big lock, you know, shelf lock or padlock. And there are some leaked reports of the survey. One leaked report suggests that survey says that Okaligas and Linkayats are not the majority community in Karnataka. Traditionally, it is believed Linkayats are 16 to 17%, and Okaligas or Gowdas, as they are called in the Mandya belt, they are supposed to be something like 11 to 12%. This is the, you know, all these are beliefs. Caste thing is, we don't have any caste data after 1931. This we should be very, very clear. All this TV room discussion and other thing are all based on assumptions, or in Tamil, what is called attitude. You know, tell something. In one conversation, in a thing, one person, one expert, senior journalist, he is called. He told some constituency has got 60% Yadavs. And at the end of it, I politely asked him outside, you know, there is no available caste data like this. Only religious data is available. Caste data is available only for SCST, not for any other community. How did you come to know Yadavs? He told, no, professor, the anchor is Yadav. I thought I would just, you know, mention this so that he calls me next time. Very simple. There is no other rhyme or reason. Anyhow, that Karnataka census has not been released. Done by the Congress government. Now the Congress government again is in power, actually. And what they found is Muslims and SCs constitute roughly 30% of the population. Muslims at 18%. SCs around 40% of the population. Added to this other small groups, it could be 45 to 50%. It's a very explosive type of a finding, and somehow it has not been released. Now what I would like this is, first is Rahul Gandhi to tell his cabinet in Karnataka to release this survey. This is the most, this caste, one caste survey at least is available. What is done already? The second is more interesting. Along with the 2011, when P. Chidambaram was the Home Minister, there was a clamor for caste survey that time also. This 2011 census was the last census. 2021 had to be completed due to COVID and other. So what was decided? The, along with the regular census, a socio-economic survey would be conducted. It's not legally a census type of thing, but it would also be carried out. They did carry out, and they have collected huge bulk, 320 million households they claim they have visited, another thing. Anyhow, they found huge amount of problem. There are 70,000 entries which are not easily explainable. There are NAIK and NAOAK. Both of them are having their own issues. Like that, there are so many type of associated issue with that. Socio-economic, but basically a caste survey. Also, how the people identify themselves in the caste is another issue. There are 400, believe me, 400 subcaste of Jats in this country. And all of them are called Jats for political convenience. But when you go and invigilator or the person who is conducting the survey ask a group to which caste he belong, he may not identify as a Jat. Same thing in Tamil Nadu, for instance, easy to say. There is Kallar, Maravar and Agamudaya. All three are considered as part of a group called Thevar. This Thevar is a very last 40-50, not even 40-50 years. This in the films and the politics, this began to be talked about. So when you ask a person, he may say he is a Kallar. Another person will say he is an Agamudayar. And only the British had the audacity to say the invigilator will decide to which caste he will belong. This is how it was done in 1891. This was given in their prayer. Because in 1881, the first caste census, many people did not give a proper response according to the Britishers. They didn't get, they got hardly some 800 caste or something. So they were very upset. Then they told the enumerator, you decide. If the fellow is slightly having a mush and, having a good physique, you put him as Kshatriya. If the fellow is sitting in a pillow and not getting up, you put him as a Baniya or a Vaishya. Like this, if a fellow has got a tuft and all these things. Terrible thing. In the whole world, nowhere in the world, any census or any type of survey, the invigilator will decide to where you belong. Anyhow, that was decided, and that's how the fourfold classification came. I always used to challenge any person belonging to Dravidian stock or this stock or that stock to tell one fourfold classification before 1881. Caste existed before 1881, no doubt about it. But this ranking hierarchy was created in 1881 by the British. The census commissioner told, we introduced this because we thought we will have a similar mirror image of England. England used to have senior civil servant, middle level officers, clerks and peons. So the same fourfold classification we thought we will create in India. Anyhow, so that 2011 socio-economic survey, that data, bulk data, is also kept in a locker in Delhi, not in Bangalore, Delhi, called Niti Aayog. They were asked to clean up that data. This was around 2017 or 18. They were asked. They have politely kept it in a sealed godrej. Some people say, why do you say godrej almirah? It could be anyhow. Some steel almirah it has been kept, and it's some part of the data is also in the form of the CDs and the pen drives. And they have not done anything about it, according to me. So this is the, that also can be released by the dot alliance when they come to power. First thing, because it's something which is already existing, why don't you use it instead of conducting a new one? So the idea of conducting a caste census is not an easy task, as Rahul Gandhi thinks. It's a very, very complicated task. That is the first point we should recognize. Because he is, and about the Muslims, they also have got caste. They are represented by 61 to 62 caste, subcaste and other thing. And that is the criticism today, because all the Muslims have been categorized as a backward caste. which is not true. There are much advanced caste Muslims. There are much not so advanced caste Muslims. Anyhow, even Christians also got their caste. There is no doubt about it. So every community has got caste. The Sikhs, which was created fundamentally against casteism, they have as many caste as they have Jat Sikhs, they have Dalit Sikhs, they have all type of things. So that is the first challenge to be faced when the India Alliance take office, assuming Rahul is anointed as a PM of the country, assuming that he wins in both the constituencies. He's one has already finished today, that voting is over in Wayanad, and reports suggest he may also contest in Amethi. Assuming he wins and assuming India, all assumptions I am making, when he takes over, he has to think about conducting this caste. Almost every census general has alerted and cautioned about this caste census. It's not an easy task in contemporary situation. It's a very, very complicated task. That's the first point we have. The second side of the debate is, you wanted to say something, Ayer? Sorry.
Yes. Sir, thank you so much. Viewers, we just put the link in the chat window for all those who have voted in this phase to confirm whether you voted on a VVPAT or not. We are trying to take this thing out of the equation, the EVM out of the equation. If everybody voted, and right now the numbers are 12,000 people have responded, 12,000, 88% said that you voted on a VVPAT enabled EVM. That gives us an idea that, look, you are seeing what you are voting. You have confirming what you are voting. Because this blaming the EVM business has to stop. I'm trying to force all the politicians in India to think about what they're going to do for people, not how to enrich their own pockets. Enrich the persons, your constituency's pockets, not your pockets. This is the whole idea. It's not that if you're poking fun at DMK, it's not that, you know, others are all clean. Everybody is in the same thing. If this guy goes to Maldives, that guy goes to Malaysia. No big difference. So, anyway, so please do connect. That link is available in the chat window. It just went beyond the scroll window. Just go back. You'll see the link. Click on that and confirm whether you saw a VVPAT enabled EVM. Thank you so much. Please, back to you, sir.
Okay. The second dimension of the problem is estimating or doing the survey of the assets. As the waiting in PM, Rahul Gandhi says, we have to survey of the institutions and the associated methods. I do not understand survey of institution anyhow. Perhaps he means by telling how much banks and how much of all these are lending and other thing. Anyhow, survey of the assets. What are the assets? Typically, the assets are land for an household, land, gold, and your financial assets, what are they are kept in banks or mutual fund and other thing. And some of the assets could be abroad, as Ayer was explaining earlier. So these are the major form of assets of the Indian household. By and large, Indian household financial assets are in banks. We are a bank-oriented country. 60% of the household financial assets are in banks. Unlike, say, US, even Japan is a bank-oriented, so the Europe. Actually, in Japan, people keep all their 80% of the financial assets are in banks. In spite of Japan having a very advanced share market and other things. At a point of time, 3 years before, Japanese banks told, we have so much surplus funds. If you keep funds with us, we will charge you interest.
Negative.
We will not provide you interest. But even then, the public went and deposited in banks. Somehow, the people are more bank-oriented. Same thing in India, same thing in Europe. US is the only country which is obsessed with this share market. Not all. So we also think that, Sensex or Nifty is the be all and end all. And some people count how much is owned by the rich people in the share market. That's a very, very 5 to 6% upper limit, I am telling, of the financial assets of household only go to share market. Earlier, it used to be 2%. Now, because of the mutual fund and other thing, it has increased. Otherwise, all funds are kept in the form of gold, land, and bank. These are the major sources. And in the gold, very interesting, 2010, we conducted a survey along with ING. We did a book actually, IIM Bangalore and ING did a book on future of our pension fund and other things. That was used by PFRDA much later. Anyhow, this was a very comprehensive survey of some, if I recall, some 12,000 or some thing, farmers, lawyers, doctors, various type of groups to find out what is their saving pattern. One of the question was, how much is the gold your spouse possess? This is a very simple question. And many people told 40 grams, some people told 400 grams, some, you know, like this. And believe me, statistically, there was a 10 sigma variation in what they told. Almost all of them, people who told their wife has got 40 gram gold, actually their wife has got 400 gram. People who told their wife has got 4,000, actually their wife has got only 40 gram. Like this, almost all of them were not correct. And many told, sir, we can't keep track. This is our department. And today, actually, I saw one judgment where this court has told that the sridhan of the wife cannot be under any circumstances claimed by the man. Anyhow, that's a separate issue. Point is, if the husband doesn't know how much gold his wife is having, how will government of India ever try to find out how much gold she is having, is my question. I don't think it will be easy or possible. Not only that, it's not the current consumption. There are families with heirlooms, you know, huge amount of gold of the past kept, you know, coming from generation to generation in their thing. And actually, some of you may recall during the Manmohan Singh time, what you call our Chidambaram time, there was a gold deposit which was continued even by Yashwant Sinha in the bank. You know, you go and deposit your gold in the bank, you will get some interest and the bank will keep the gold and then return it to you after, say, 4 years, 5 years. And everybody thought this is going to be a huge success and nothing happened. Two reasons. One is the banks were to convert the gold into bars and return it to you, gold bars. And most of those designs and other thing, the women are very particular. Old type and other thing is not very easy to even duplicate those designs today. So nobody is going to get their gold ornaments converted into gold bars. And then second is, let's be very clear, by and large, people are very skeptical about the government. And nobody wants to give anything to government. And this amount of gold can be provided if there is a noble cause and a very, very noble leader. It's a very rare occasion. I'll tell you one example. When I was in school in 62, in my area in Chennai, Madras it used to be called, a jeep went around with all the leaders, Kamaraj, Rajaji, and communists were not there because they were pro-China, or rather, they thought India is responsible for the war. Anyhow, all other leaders were there in the jeep. And many women on their own volition gave gold to these leaders. My aunt gave her bangles. Of course, my uncle never forgave her throughout his life. He was telling, you are a stupid woman. And she was very emotional. She removed her bangle and gave. Today, if a group of leaders come in a jeep, the women will hold their chain and run inside houses because they will be worried that these fellows will capture it and then take it away. That is the type of change which has come about in our polity and leadership. So if you have a credible leader, if they are a noble cause, then this gold may be possible to be tapped, not otherwise. So this survey, second part of the issue is huge amount of land and gold is held by the government employees in the form of bribes. Most of the bribe money is, if you know, in a small town setting, you may not be able to send it to Maldives or Mauritius, as our friend Iyer was mentioning. He might have to keep it within India. So he keeps it in the form of land or gold. These are the two very, very, because obviously you can't keep it in the bank because then it becomes white. So the black money has to be kept in these two forms. And the survey is not going to be very easy about this black money kept by particularly land registration department and RTO. These are some areas where huge amount of black money is generated on a daily basis. We estimated in 2010 that roughly 100 crore is generated in Bangalore alone per day. Every day, the land registration and police are the two major revenue earners on their own account. You can imagine today and in a city like Bombay, how much should be? Roughly, very conservative estimate is 10% of our GDP is generated in the form of black money. 250 lakh crores was the last year. Roughly, I am talking about. So that means 25 lakh crore is the black money. This is annual. Kindly remember, this is not static. Every year, so this will increase. So that is the other dimension of this is agriculture. Agriculture income is not taxed in India. It's not clear how much income is earned by the agriculturist even. Like the joke goes around about P. Chidambaram claiming that he is, you know, grown some, what one can call, cabbages or whatever, right?
Cauliflower in pot. Cauliflower in pot.
And there is another anecdote about Supriya Sule claiming that she made some 100 crore out of 10 acre land and, you know, she can be given global Krishi Ratna title and another. Anyhow, so that is another dimension of the issue. Agriculture is not taken into account. So is that also going to be part of the asset owning? So first is classification of the caste and various things as per Rahul Gandhi's insistent. Second is this asset to be known, what all the assets which are available. Third is, what is the mechanism? One simple method could be to have a what one can call a wealth tax. 4% or 5% everybody should pay annually. How much people will pay, how much of this will become black money, nobody knows. Anyhow, this is one method. Other method is what our friend, what is his name? I'm not getting. Our friend in US, US Congress head.
Oh, it's Pitroda, Sam Pitroda.
Sam Pitroda was suggesting was to follow what a person dies, then you take away 45-50% of his wealth and use it either in the government or maybe in India you can even distribute it. So that could be another. So what is the procedure is how to give this funds to the, and assuming roughly 10 crore people at least will be what you may classify as poor in India, or 10% of 140 mean 14 crores, because there is a significant reduction in the poverty level and other thing in India. But one major issue today will be the middle class is not going to be happy about it. Is not going to be accepting that their assets taxes can be levied and other. It's a very, and middle class in India is a very, very vague term. Everybody claims to be middle class. I'll tell you an example. One of the major, you know, industrialist or who can be called a tycoon, he was associated with IIM Bangalore. At that time, we were all, and a convocation was there. After that is over, we were coming out. Couple of us were along with him, some small chit-chat. He was waiting for the car to come to the portico. His car has to and till, you know, some sort of exchange and other thing. Some faculty mentioned to him about inflation at that point of time. It was in the beginning of the century, or around 2005 or 10 or. He told, yeah, it's a very serious issue. Middle class like us are all impacted by it. I was having a paper cup coffee and it spilled on my new shirt. Because convocation, I have put on new shirt and gone. Anyhow, the point is, the richest man in India identifies himself as the middle class. You can imagine. What is that? In India, there are no rich people at all. Let's be very clear about it. People either are middle class or poor. Only two groups are there. Anyhow, today the situation is significantly different than what was there in the 1950s or 1980s. And at that time, the estate tax was there and that was removed. Wealth at the death of a person. And it is suggested today that after Indira Gandhi died, it is felt that Rajiv might have to pay the taxes on inheritance and other things. That, anyhow, it's a very strong assertion. One doesn't know, you know, correlation is there, but causation, we don't know. But at that point of time, it was abolished, which is a fact actually. But more important, according to me, is Sonia Gandhi collected all the Nehru papers and took it away with her. And that, according to me, is much more important issue. All the Nehru papers today are with Sonia Gandhi. I think many people may not be even aware of it. If you want to do research on Nehru, all his correspondence, all his papers, all his musings and handwriting, you have to apply to Sonia Gandhi. I am not telling this. Ramchandra Guha, who is considered as a courtier, or who is considered as one of the chamjas of the Nehru family. Of course, nowadays he is very much upset with the current Gandhi family. It doesn't matter. He has mentioned explicitly that without applying to her, you cannot get any Nehru papers. This is much more, according to me, this is more important than the inheritance tax of what was available with Rajiv Gandhi or not. So, this is the third issue. The fourth issue is Dot Alliance coming to power. I think that is a speculation. We will not enter into that because it's a highly hypothetical one. Because almost all the surveys which have come from pro NDA, anti NDA, and all that, everybody gives a working majority for the NDA or BJP. If you ask me, I would say they would end up with 300 plus. That's not my wish. That's my forecast. Wish is they should get 400 and other. But 300 is adequate for them to, again, you know, like last time they got 303. They will lose obviously some 10 to 15, 15 to 20 or whatever they reach in the northern plains and other thing. They have to compensate it. They may compensate it by three, four seats in south, Tamil Nadu, or Telangana, another thing, and maybe one or two more seats in other locations. In other words, they may end up something like minus 15 plus 10. So you can do the arithmetic. 303 minus 15 and this side plus 10. So it will be minus 5. So somewhere around 300. So the issue of Dot Alliance coming to power. Then if Dot Alliance comes to power, will Rahul be the PM? Kindly note, so far nobody has announced Rahul to be PM except Stalin in the south and their own party leaders. No other party has projected Rahul as the Alliance PM material. So that's the fourth issue. Yeah, you wanted to say
couple of things. That estate duty abolishment was retrospective to 1st October 1984.
Yeah.
Mrs. Gandhi was assassinated on the 31st October 1984. Correct. So that's the first one. And the second thing is, sir, there could be a net gain for the BJP in Uttar Pradesh because they got only 62 seats in 2019. This time, they may get again probably 70 plus. There could be a 10 seat addition there also. Looking positive, I'm just wanting to tell some facts here. So it could be that they could get more seats again in Uttar Pradesh. We'll see.
If it's so, it's good. Anyhow, we have to get the Dot Alliance to power and they have to accept Rahul to be the Prime Minister, for which Congress has to get some number of seats. If, suppose Trinamool or DMK gets more seats than Congress, then there is a huge problem in terms of projecting him as the PM. What I want to stress is it's a two-stage procedure. India Alliance getting majority, accepting Rahul as the PM, and then Rahul going around all these things, caste survey, asset survey, redistribution, and other. It's not going to be a very, very interesting proposition or going to be an easy proposition, actually. And any type of wealth redistribution is fraught with phenomenal amount of problems. First problem, as we were, telling is, huge amount of black money will be generated, much more than the current one. People will not like to, reveal their wealth. They would like to, hide it further and further. And that's not going to be a good issue, actually. We have come a long way, in a sense, from a 98% marginal taxation to 33% taxation. And everybody says 5% only paying taxes, which is not true. If you exclude 40% of agricultural people who are not taxed in this country, the remaining, if you take those who are eligible to pay taxes, something like 50-55% are now paying taxes, which is not a very bad number. Ideally, of course, one would say, why not 100%? It's like voting. Ideally, more than 90% should vote. Like that, the argument will be there. But otherwise, 50-55% of those who are to be taxed are taxed. And that's a very interesting number. And I am sure it will go up only. It's not going to come down or anything. Because of the technology and the type of information gathering and other thing. Today, almost, you go to a car showroom and buy a big car, automatically it is getting into the tax net, in the sense the information goes. So the amount of information as it grows more and more, plus this digi transaction, almost all of that small retail, 20 rupees, 30 rupees, even that is captured today by the banking channels and financial channels. So, what I want to stress is the 55% people who are paying tax will definitely move to 70% or something. There is no point in increasing the black money in terms of these type of this redistribution. I should share it with one economist, Thomas Piketty. He's the one who is many of these, Jean Dries is there in India. And many of them use, what I would say, very suspicious statistics to talk about, 1% of wealth is held by 90% of wealth is held by 1% of people. How do you get all these, numbers? It's like suddenly unemployment, they say, is 80%. Where from you get all these numbers is something. Very, very suspicious numbers, which are peddled by the sometimes by the international agencies also. How do they collect it? How do they? Not very clear at all. Anyhow, so we have to be very, very cautious. And this type of Western, idiom of trying to do the redistribution of wealth and other things is not going to work in India. What we should do is, because it will increase the number of lazy people, let me be very blunt. Already a lot of these, remedies, a lot of these gratis is, people are not anymore proud of their work or something. The other day, one fellow was to fix one frame in my place. He fixed it slightly like this, you know, angular. I told him, why don't you fix it straight? He said, chalega sir, he says, this is the attitude. There is no phenomenal amount of pride used to be there in those days among people, whether it is electrician, whether it is plumber, whether it is a professor, or in their activity, you know, they have to be, they are very fond of their activity. That is declining. And that's one of the reason is this freebies. When you give, people begin to think that, you know, they are somehow entitled in order to get this. If you give a person a, you know, 90% mark, whether he is scoring or not, then he feels he is entitled. So this is another dangerous thing which is happening in our country. And the sooner we put a full stop, the better for the polity as well as the future of the country.
Thank you so much, Professor RV. We have a few questions for our...
Sure.
So this is a Q&A session for you, sir. This is how well the students have understood this class. Rohit Akshay wants to know.
Ram Pichoda. Mad in Telugu. Feudal poor work like India. Eight away country, Venezuela. Bringing these old trodden ideas. Totally agreed. Venezuela got screwed up. Cuba, of course, now is reverting to what you may loosely call free market. Cuba is allowing small businesses and so many. Cuba, Russia, China also. All these are still considered as communist countries only in JNU countries.
Yeah.
Not anywhere else, right? Okay. Thank you.
Next one. Thank you, Balasubramanian Sanjeevi, for becoming a YouTube member. Mangat Ranga wants to know, Namaskaram. What do you attribute to the low turnout? Did it being a Friday today be an important factor? Is it a good idea to make voting mandatory?
Making voting mandatory is not a very desirable idea because it's very difficult to implement some of these things. What do? You know, you go and catch hold of everyone and push him into the polling booth or something. You know, in India, the problem is not having policies, but having method of implementing it. Friday, I don't think can be an important factor. Basically, good number of our, I would say, definitely educated, rich, middle class, is not interested in democracy. They think, you know, Ravan, whether it is Ram or Ravan. In Kannada, they say, all are thieves. So why should I go on? But if you see the villagers, if you see the poorer segment, they are very enthusiastic. They somehow think that this will make a difference. So this attitude towards our functioning of our system, that we are one of the basic cogs of the system, this is not recognized. People are, you know, the richer group, the educated group are alienated from these activities. This is the major problem, actually. Actually, a lot of youngsters, you know, the college students, there were some people who were asking some question. They didn't know the difference between a parliament election and an assembly election. What do you do for this, actually? Anyhow, that is a type of indifference. You know, people are more interested in pubs and this and that and other things. Okay.
Pavan Kishore wants to know, Namaskaram, sir. What does low turnout mean for BJP and NDA? Also, with now the case registered on Tejasvi Surya, will his candidature be disqualified?
No. I don't see these cases are come and go before poll. You know, many cases are registered. Many of them are told you have to appear, and I don't think it's I don't think lower turnout is not good for NDA. Definitely. They would expect a much higher turnout, particularly their own followers and other thing. Let's wait and see. There is another argument giver. Lower turnout is helpful to BJP because their committed cadre will anyhow go on vote. And they are not bothered about anything else. Let's wait and see. Fourth, it will be clear. Fourth next evening, I will conduct a major program, right?
Yes.
Gini index improved under Modi.
Yes.
It's not a it's not a good measure at all, I would say. The parameters on which it is built in, and if you India, I mean, if you go back to that book, you will find anyhow, some other occasion, I'll discuss about it.
Thank you, sir. Chaitanya Tatle has already wants to know what happened to the report of this one. Yeah. Has India's GINI index? No. Go back one, please.
Not much has happened. Hopefully, in the next term, assuming that NDA comes to power, they do something very serious about it. Right?
This is a technical question for you, sir. Gini index, Lorenz curve.
Explain to that. Gini index has got some deficiencies in terms of our own situation. But one thing is, on an average, many people agree that number of people have been brought outside the poverty line. It's not as acute as it used to be in the 60s and 70s. There are still large number of people who are poor, but it's not as... as Amartya Sen says, very interestingly, the democracy is one of the important reasons for it. For instance, some of you may or may not remember, in 90s, there was a severe problem in Orissa's Kalahandi district and serious type of poverty. Some people even died without food. But within 1 or 2 days, the entire country's attention was on the district. And so much press coverage, so much of media, everybody rushed there. Free food, free kitchens were opened by Ramakrishna Mission and so many other type of service agencies. What I want to say is, being a democracy really is helpful in alleviating acute poverty type of situations. Because China had a huge type of drought and poverty in the 50s. That data they released only in the 80s. They did agree that they had a massive famine and so many people died. That was not available at that point of time. So, whatever said and done, it may be due to Modi or it may be due to the time has gone by. In the last 15 years, at least I would say, there has been a poverty reduction. One can argue in terms of percentage. Today, I don't think you can classify more than 20% of Indian population as below any measurement of poverty line. 20% is the upper limit, I would say. Okay.
Next one, please. Vignesh wants to know, what happened to the report?
I told you, if assuming NDA comes to power, hopefully they will take up this illicit money abroad on a very big scale. Okay.
Sundar Kidambi wants to know, sir, is this wealth distribution scheme similar to Leninist ideas in USSR?
No, it's not Leninist. It is much more than that. It is Stalinist, actually. Stalin is the one who nationalized all the land and, that's a very extreme form of thing. This wealth distribution idea periodically comes up in various countries, actually. Doesn't work out. Okay.
Next one, please.
No VVPAT enabled machine. I asked, but they said no. Casted my vote. Casted is not correct. It's a cast only. My vote today. Yeah, very sad. I didn't know about it. I thought almost all the constituencies, wards, VVPAT machines were available, but this is the news to me. Anyhow.
Sarvani Tumuluri wants to know, sir, according to 200 plus billionaires, can you please clarify based on what data you said there are no rich people in India?
No. I am not telling there are no rich people. I am only telling there are no people who claim themselves to be rich. That's what I am telling. There are enough rich people in India. Kindly note that. I agree with you. 200 plus millionaires is also maybe an underestimate. See, huge number of land owning, gold owning and other thing is not coming out. See, in small town, forget about your Ambani and other thing who show all their wealth. By and large, our attitude is not to reveal the wealth. A very wealthy man will pretend to be a average type of thing. In a, say, in a place like Coimbatore, one fellow will come with, you know, he will be having a dhoti and a sort of white shirt and walking. He may be a billionaire actually. He will not, you know, show himself to be a very great. He will have a green big belt. And if you shake him, you will get a couple of lakhs of rupees. Anyhow, what I want to say is, not showing off is not in our culture. Except recent time, this Bombay, because of this Bollywood and all these Ambanis and others, where they show off there. In other words, there is small segment who want to show that they have 1 crore wealth, but as if they have got 100 crore wealth. There is another segment who have 100 crore, but they are very polite and they don't want to reveal it to anyone. So I am not telling there are no rich people. Oh gosh, don't ever. India is full of rich people. India is, as they say, that poor country, but with rich people. Okay.
Next one. MD Ravikant wants to know, will one nation, one election increase the voting percentage?
One doesn't know. It's a very tricky question. It may not necessarily increase. See, the voting percentage can be increased provided the enlightened, so-called quote-unquote, educated, middle class, think that they are the ones who are running the country. This is most important. This is not happening. You see, the low voting percentage you see in metros, where it is supposed to be highly educated and you know, fairly rich people and everything. Like South Bangalore, South Chennai, all the, except Calcutta. That's the only place where either by rigging or otherwise regular, God knows, the voting percentage is always very significant. Okay.
Next one, please. Thought Provocator wants to know, why are people so indifferent to their most important right, which they get to exercise only once in 5 years usually?
Good question. But the attitude of many people is, all are thieves. Why should we go and elect one thief versus the other thief? That's the thing. And many are not enthusiastic. They tend to think, doesn't matter whether Ravan is ruling us, Ram is ruling us. So they are not, they really don't think that their vote is one of the critical thing which decides about our functioning of our country. Okay.
That brings us to a close of today's session. Is Nupur going to contest? Cargo crew wants to
know. I don't think so. As of now, I wish they could, if she contest. And one point I want to add, our voting percentage is better than that of many of the developed countries.
Yes.
Many of the European countries' voting percentage is very poor actually. That's what our external affairs minister once told, our worst percentage is better than your best percentage. So shut up. That's what he mentioned actually. So it's not that we should despair or anything. Some of the Western people don't go and vote at all. You will see sometime 49%, 30%. The Arab countries where there are dictatorship and some of the African country dictatorship, you get 99.9% voting actually. I always used to wonder, who is that 0.1% fellow who had the courage to vote against the not vote anyhow. Otherwise, most of the European democratic countries, people are not very enthusiastic.
Thank you so much, Professor RV, and this was a wonderful session. Viewers, please like, share and subscribe to our channel, and don't forget to click on the bell button for notifications. Namaskar.
Very good.